Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 26, Number 20. Napakam devam
Napakam devam
Vamhaindro jagatpate
Vamhaindro jagatpate
Vaya babako vipra
Vaya babako vipra
Devanam hichasarvaha You, aha, our, Paramakam, supreme,
Devam,
worshipable deity, Tvam, you, aha, our, Indra, Lord Indra, Jagatpate, a master of the universe, Bhavaiha, for the welfare, Baba, please be, go, of the cows, Vipra, the Brahmanas, Devanam, and the demigods, yea, who, cha, and, Sadavaha, saintly persons. Translation, you are our worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the brahmanas, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Hudananda Goswami Maharaj. The Supreme Lord is self-sufficient. He can do everything Himself. The Lord appointed one of His innumerable children to the position of Indra, the Lord of the cosmic heaven. But Indra abused His authority. And now Sarabi requests Lord Krishna, the Absolute Truth, to directly become her Lord, her Indra. We should carefully perform our duties without false pride. Thus we shall not become obsolete and embarrassed, as in the present case of King Indra, who actually attacked Lord Krishna and his Vrindavan devotees. You are a worshipful deity, therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the brahmanas, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. So, Sridharananda Goswami Maharaj begins his purport by making the statement that the Supreme Lord is self-sufficient and He can do everything Himself. And yet He has appointed one of His innumerable children to the position of Indra, the Lord of the cosmic heaven. I think the word Indra actually means king, king of heaven. So, just as sometimes when there is not a suitable living entity to take the post of Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna will, in one of his various incarnations, will actually take that post of Lord Brahma, although ordinarily, Lord Brahma is an ordinary living entity. And in the same way, if there's not a suitable Indra, then the Lord will also assume that particular post, as He did in His incarnation called one of the 20-odd Jagya.
Yeah.
During the reign of Svayambhuva Manu, and around about the time of the changeover, there wasn't a suitable living entity. He took the post of Indra. So, and in this case, here we have someone who actually has the post of Indra. So Krishna hasn't replaced him, but he certainly had to step in and sort things out. Because for some time Indra has certainly, you know, done something foolish here, as Prudhananda points out, that he has actually attacked Lord Krishna and his Vrindavan devotees. So that's like attacking, you know, something we can put it in our perspective. If we attack the Prime Minister's children, you know, and you know, he himself and his children, if you were one of his ministers, you wouldn't expect to be a minister for much longer. So it's a very, it's lamentable, but there's a very serious warning in this, that the danger of the material energy, and you know, that's the point of these pastimes. We shouldn't, we should be very careful not to criticize persons, elevated persons such as Lord Indra, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, when they sometimes, you know, perform, you know, these activities where there are apparent, you know, big mistakes, big foolish activities. We shouldn't become absorbed in the gloating sort of mentality, or a critical mentality. That's, we should be very careful not to actually go down that road with such great personalities. And Lord Indra is certainly, you know, a devotee. But, you know, where our meditation should go is that how powerful is the material energy that even such great personalities like Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, you know, Krishna's energy can completely bewilder them and put them into the most embarrassing situations. So, you know, in the case with Indra, sometimes, you know, there are other pastimes where he has found himself in very embarrassing situations. You know, at one stage, because of an offence to his spiritual master, the demigods and Indra, they lost the entire heavenly planets to the demons, because, you know, Indra was, due to pride, he was travelling along his on his elephant, Aravata, I think, and his spiritual master happened to be passing along. His spiritual master passed him a garland, which he then placed, you know, upon the head of the elephant, and then the elephant just chucked it on the ground, trampled on it. So it was considered, you know, an offence. This morning I walked into the temple for Mongolia. I saw Prabhupada's garland on the floor down there, so I picked it up from the bookshelf, because, you know, it's not proper. We should be very respectful with the spiritual master and anything that represents the spiritual master, because the spiritual master, of course, is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here Indra, you know, being a little proud of his position in several different instances, has lost the protection of the blessings of the Brahmanas, of the spiritual master, and of the Supreme Lord himself. So therefore the material energy has just swooped in and just, you know, completely created havoc in his life. So that's the lesson that we should take from this. How as soon as we are not under Krishna's shelter, then the material energy of Maya is immediately waiting to step in. And when the material energy steps in, she causes havoc in our life. at this. So, as I think Jagatrini was pointing out, quoting from Jagatrini Mataji, was pointing out, quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that, you know, when one becomes proud and angry, then anything is possible. You know, once you're in the grip of Maya, there's just no telling where it ends. So this is the lesson that we have to take very, very seriously from this pastime. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that this material energy of mine is very difficult to overcome, but for those who have surrendered unto me, they can easily cross beyond it. So we understand the point that the material energy, it is not possible even for personalities like Lord Indra, Lord Brahma, great powerful sages, great mystic yogis, they cannot surpass the influence of the material energy. Then we should ask the question, how will I ever, you know, get out of the material energy? So Krishna says, but it is possible if you have my protection. When Krishna gives the devotee his protection, they step over the material energy just as one steps over the hoof print of a calf. You know, the water contained the hoof print of a calf, you step over it very easily. Otherwise, the material energy is like a vast ocean, unsurpassable by the greatest personalities. But a devotee, they can cross the material ocean just like stepping over the hoofprint of a calf. That becomes very easy if you have Krishna's protection. So Srila Prabhupada therefore the Supreme Lord, he is actually Jagatpati, the master of the universe. In fact, he's the master of all the universes, and he is our worshipable deity. So the spiritual master is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the spiritual master therefore he chalks out the program by how we can immediately connect with Krishna and Krishna's full protection, and simply by following the process chalked out by the acharyas, the spiritual master, which is all confirmed by Shastra conclusion, then even though we are, you know, tiny, very vulnerable spirit souls, you know, nothing in comparison to Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, nothing in comparison to great sages and great yogis, still, little or less, we can actually cross beyond the ocean of material existence if we actually just follow the instructions of the spiritual master. So, Srila Prabhupada, for that purpose, created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, so that anyone wanting to seriously cross over the ocean of material existence, that opportunity is there. And he gave a process which was presented by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, very, very elaborately, explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta, Raghunath Das, Jiva Goswami, Gopala Bhatta Goswami, these various acharyas, who then, compiled books on the great science of Krishna consciousness, and that is being passed down by one acharya to the next, and according to time, place and circumstances, without changing anything, but taking into consideration the particular circumstances, that has been presented in this very simple Krishna conscious process. And that is, the devotees, as Prabhupada would call it, the devotees' routine work. The routine work of a devotee is they get up from Mangalarti, 4 o'clock, maybe between about 4 and 10, routine work of a devotee. You get 6 hours sleep between 4 and 10. They rise from Mangalarti, worship the spiritual master. Very nice way to begin the day, to meditate. That our, whatever progress we're going to make that day, we're going to make it by following the instruction of the spiritual master. That's our meditation. Quite often the non-devotees, of course, they roll out of bed, they grab a bit of toast and a cup of coffee, swish it down, and off they go without thinking. they just plow into the day. And you can just see the messy world that we have, because that's what people do. They have these, without any real understanding, they just go through their day. But a devotee, always very careful that they wake up, bathe, shower, freshen up, clearing away that mode of ignorance. Can I get a little thanks, bro. And then they try and just think very clearly. So today, I certainly don't want to become Maya. I certainly don't want Maya to come in and just create havoc in my life. I certainly don't want to be engaged in so many material activities. So therefore, the first meditation is, I must take shelter of Krishna's representative, must take shelter of the spiritual master. And we sing various prayers which, chalk out the activities of the spiritual master and the activities which the spiritual master likes to engage us in. And then, of course, we worship Tulsi to, cleanse away any, offences or, we may have committed unintentionally. Thank you. And then we chant Hare Krishna. 16 rounds. Mm-hmm. And the devotees, they chant Hare Krishna. They attend classes twice a day at least, or at least once in the day. But generally, I guess most devotees would then do a little reading in the evening, which they're supposed to do. Previously it was a lot easier. Do they have the evening program? Yeah, that's good. But for some time it seemed to dwindle off a little bit. But Prabhupada called the ISKCON sandwich. Your morning spiritual activities, where you're just dedicating your whole attention to spiritual activities. You do your activities during the day, and then you come home in the evening, and then you again engage in these spiritual activities. The activities you perform in the middle, they're also spiritual, because the consciousness is correct. So it's the ISKCON sandwich, very, very relishable. So, devotees, they hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they study Bhagavad Gita, and they perform some type of activity whereby they're, engaging in some service for the satisfaction of Krishna. Of course, Krishna can do it all, as is stated here. He doesn't, there's really nothing he needs, but he accepts the loving attitude by which we perform that service. Therefore, of course, the devotee should never become proud that, I am doing such and such a service and you are doing such and such a service. We have to be devotees understanding that, it's the mood, the humble mood, that I'm doing something for Krishna, trying to offer some, service to Krishna with love. That's what Krishna is accepting. He's not thinking, this one is such a big devotee, I'll accept his service, I'll accept from this man, not from this woman. you know, I'll accept devotional service from this, you know, race and not that race. Krishna doesn't make any distinctions. Actually, in one letter to devotees, Prabhupada said, big or small devotees, everyone, you know, follows the same process. But, you know, factually, there are no, you know, there are no real big devotees in the sense that we're all trying to be humble servants of Krishna. Always being very, very, very careful of not allowing pride to enter within our service. Because pride is a symptom that we actually want to enjoy in the material world. Pride means we are we're trying to enjoy, you know, either in a subtle way or a you know, more gross way, but we're trying to get some attention so that we can, you know, enjoy you know, some profit, some gain, some adoration, either subtle or gross, from that. We want to enjoy something in the material world in a subtle or gross way. Pride is a, you know, is a subtle way of, you know, where that enjoyment, that tendency to enjoy the material world kicks back in. It has nothing to do with devotional service, so therefore we should be very, very careful to, you know, root that out and perform our services, you know, just very, very in a humble state of mind. Definitely some services Srila Prabhupada is given greater importance, such as, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, there are many statements where Srila Prabhupada, you know, particularly pushed the point of, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness. But he also very strongly pushed the point that if we don't have strong temple life, our preaching will have no effect. Devotees can run around, you know, preach. But if the temple life and their routine program is not strong, the effect will not be there. Therefore, when devotees engage in temple worship, you know, there are many wonderful results. It's actually part of the preaching movement. It shouldn't be considered as, you know, secondary. In the sense that devotees who set the example of, you know, strong engagement in temple life and preaching Krishna consciousness, you know, they're actually showing the proper path chalked out by the acharyas. You know, Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada actually said, you know, I am asking you to do the same that I'm doing. Srila Prabhupada used to, you know, actually attend, you know, the to the deity worship, and he would sometimes also sit and hear from his own disciples and hear them speak. And he would say to his disciples that don't become a bigger Paramahamsa than your Guru Maharaj. That, you know, I am doing this, but, you know, you're a bigger Paramahamsa, you don't have to do it. And that. So, you know, although certainly we should all have a preaching spirit within our, you know, whatever service we're doing, at the same time, we should, you know, back up that preaching spirit with strong temple life and, you know, routine program of chanting Hare Krishna and following the four regular principles. So, the other very, very important, you know, part of our program is to chant 16 rounds. Chanting 16 rounds every day without fail. this was Prabhupada said many, you know, many times when different devotees wrote to him and would ask him about various problems that they may be having, difficulties, either in management, in preaching, financially, or in their, you know, just their ability to maintain as a devotee. And Prabhupada would say, our process is simple. You chant 16 rounds without fail every day. You follow the four regular principles. You make sure your routine work is going on, rising for Mangalarti, attending the classes, associating with devotees. And you do some service, you know, for Krishna during the day. If you do that, you are guaranteed a success. And Srila Prabhupada would say, I can guarantee your success. I can guarantee it. So, these things are very, very important. And of course, as soon as we slacken in these, you know, routine activities, we lose the protection, that spiritual protection. We actually lose that spiritual protection. So the Prabhupada, sometimes there were one or two disciples, perhaps more now, who, disregarded Srila Prabhupada's process, and he would say that, you know, they've become my disciple, but they're not following. How can I protect them? Mm-hmm. See, sometimes people, devotees, feel that when they take initiation, that's the finish. That, you know, I'm going back to Godhead. I've seen that. Devotees, they will, you know, take initiation, and they will feel, you know, I'm guaranteed to go back to Godhead now. And then sometimes they actually just go off and think that they can just, you know, they've got the shelter, they've got the protection, the pure devotee, they've connected with Krishna, and they just sort of wander off to the material world. But if you actually look at all the Srila Prabhupada's instructions, he doesn't really say, if you take initiation, you're going back to Godhead. Generally, in his letters and his writings, it is, you take initiation, you chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, and follow your routine program and preach Krishna consciousness, and you are guaranteed, you know, success. You go back to Godhead. If there are problems in this material world, they'll just, you know, subside by the strength of that. And all facilities, you know, you need for your Krishna consciousness will be provided. And you go back to Godhead. Krishna will actually reveal himself to you. So, in this way, although, you know, certainly the material energy is there to be, you know, we should have a healthy fear of the material energy. Because as we've seen, for, you know, many thousands of devotees, as soon as there is some deviation, they stop chanting 16 rounds properly, stop following the four regular principles, you know, maybe they make some adjustment, maybe there's only three which, you know, practical, you know, they make some mental adjustment beyond the instructions of the guru, you know, then the havoc begins to, you know, enter into the spiritual life. Maya comes in and places, you know, even some very, very nice devotees who have given so much to Krishna, that Maya will come in as soon as those activities slacken, and she will place one in the most embarrassing situation. And that's, you know, that's the warning, I guess, the lesson from this pastime with Lord Indra. You know, and it's not just a pastime that happened somewhere in the heavenly planet, you know, or with Indra, who lives in the heavenly planets, you know, or 5,000 years ago. But, you know, we've actually seen this throughout the We've seen it even in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that, you know, sometimes when, you know, certain personalities did not adhere to the principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even in his association, then again the protection was not fully there. So it's not just because we've taken initiation, it's not just because we're in a temple, it's not because we're wearing a dhoti or a sari. And even it's not that we are fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, because sometimes we see devotees are fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, but they allow these things to slacken: the 16 rounds, the four regular principles, the regular morning program or what have you. They allow those things to slacken, and even though they're preaching and doing so much work, and when I'm doing so much for Krishna, why am I struggling? Why is it so much problem? And that is because that must be there to maintain. Then the full protection is there. Prabhupada says that, you know, when these activities are there, again and again and again, he says it to his disciples in his letters and his books, you know, that these things must be there. The chanting must be there. The 16 rounds, the four regular principles, the temple program, reading, engagement like that, associating with devotees. Then, you know, when we're performing our devotional service, not only is it very blissful for us and we're getting full realization, but we're actually able to impress, devotional service into the hearts of others. Just like many movements in this world, so-called spiritual movements, are really, in a very embarrassing situation. There's nothing spiritual about them at all. A lot of religious movements have become an embarrassment to themselves because there are no regulative principles. Even though they're engaged, they study books, they do so many different things. So Maya is very, very fearful, but we should be completely confident, fully confident in Prabhupada's instructions. Chant 16 rounds, follow the principles, make sure your regular, spiritual practices are always there without fail every day, and you are completely protected from Maya. Then preach Krishna consciousness, engage in so much service, and you're guaranteed complete success in life. Right, I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments, yeah.
You want to say something? Jayananda disappearance?
Jayananda's disappearance? Mm. Well, I guess. Jayananda Prabhu, of course, we should mention, because he pleased Srila Prabhupada so much, because he was, he did that. He just followed Srila Prabhupada. What Prabhupada gave him, he just took it so enthusiastically, and that's the secret. If we could, tackle our rounds and tackle the four regular principles and get an upper Mangaladi with the same enthusiasm we tackle a plate of prasadam, we'd definitely go back to Gaudiya. Yeah. That enthusiasm has to be there. Now, Jayananda, he was like that. They say when he used to chant, bouncing up, Hare Krishna, like that, just enthusiastically chanting his rounds like that. And he showed such enthusiasm, that enthusiasm, if we show enthusiasm, not just for, some aspect of Krishna consciousness that we like, but we must show enthusiasm for that, spiritual program that Srila Prabhupada has set up. That must be there as well. And then the success. So Jayananda, you see, because, that enthusiasm was there for the chanting and following the principles and, getting up from Mangaladi and doing everything that Srila Prabhupada said, that enthusiasm just, went into his service, So much so that he was, you know, empowered, he was enabled by Krishna to, you know, get the, I think it was the first Rathiatra, wasn't it? You know, so he pleased Srila Prabhupada so much to, you know, to take, you know, this Rathiatra festival into San Francisco, and massive big success. Srila Prabhupada was so happy, you know, I think there are pictures that you see Prabhupada jumping up and down, you know, he's in ecstasy. So, you know, and even in the most daunting situations, because he developed leukemia, I think, and but you know, despite the fact that when he was very, very ill like that, there were certain things he couldn't do, but his enthusiasm was just as strong for Krishna consciousness, you know, even in the most you know, distraught condition. So he was a wonderful example. You know, there's one letter Prabhupada writes to one disciple. He says, in heaven or hell, you know, you follow these principles. In heaven or hell, you know, just whatever happens, just do it. So yes, he is a very good example, that if we just follow Prabhupada's example, you get Srila Prabhupada's full blessings, you go back to Godhead.
You mentioned if you take the children of the world, you can cross over the mountains through the nature, just like stepping over the river in the car. Does that apply simply at the time of death, or is that supposed? Does that also apply? Because does that also apply to your life? You're supposed to have that simply by that time.
We're in the material energy now, so. But yeah, by following that process that Srila Prabhupada has chalked out, chanting Hare Krishna regularly, 16 rounds, you know, giving up intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, you know, associating with devotees, eating Krishna prasadam, you know, following that program, there's one letter where Prabhupada says that, you know, if you do that, then all your activities in the course of the day are then on the spiritual platform. If a devotee is chanting 16 rounds nicely, following the four regular principles, and, you know, engaging those other, you know, routine spiritual activities, everything they do during the day is on the spiritual platform. It has nothing to do with the material energy. So, you know, what to speak at the time of death, you know, at the time of death also. You know, death has no real, you know, a devotee is not concerned about death because they know that, you know, for a devotee, living or dying is this, you know, life or death, there's no real difference. They know that when they're in this world, they are completely aloof from the material energy by being always absorbed in Krishna through those regulative principles and preaching Krishna consciousness. So they're aloof from the material energy, and they're always blissfully engaged under the shelter of the spiritual energy. And when this body, you know, is finally finished, then they just, you know, engage in the same activities, either, you know, in the material world again, or, you know, in the spiritual world of Krishna. So you know, always, you know, the material energy is just like we're either in the sunshine or in the darkness. Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like the darkness. So if you follow, if someone follows those activities, they're in the presence of Krishna, and therefore Maya, the darkness, cannot stand there. And as soon as we forget Krishna, then we're no longer in the sunshine of Krishna's love, and we're in the darkness. And you know, that's an old song. So, you know, yeah. So that's it. We either take shelter of Krishna, mind's always there waiting, but you know, she can't touch us while we're with Krishna. And we leave the shelter of Krishna, and immediately Maya's there. Immediately.
So it's like the surrender means following the regular process in the world. So let's
Surrender means to, you know, follow the instructions of the spiritual master, which is, you know, means following Krishna. There is, you know, in one sense, there's no real question of independence. Prabhupada says that all activities in bhakti are based upon surrender. You know, all of them. There's no independence. A devotee is always considering themselves to be fully dependent upon Krishna's mercy. Devotee doesn't have an independent, you know, attitude that, oh, I don't really need Krishna's mercy. I'm big enough to tackle material energy. The devotee always feels dependent on Krishna's mercy. Dependent, that's surrender, you know, that I surrender to you. I'm dependent upon your mercy. I surrender to you, like that. That's a mood of surrender. Independence, you know, and pride, that's the other direction, that, you know, pride, you know, we forget, you know, we're a tiny little spirit soul, we forget how powerful Krishna's material energy is, how powerful Krishna is, we think we're bigger than, you know, what we are. That's pride. And therefore, you know, because we're proud, we're independent, you know, we don't, I'll do things independently. I don't need to take shelter of Prabhupada's instructions or Krishna, you know. I'll just, you know, tackle the material world by myself. That's what Indra did. And in all cases, you know, we end up in a very embarrassing, you know, the whole material body that we sort of drag around day after day, you know, is like an embarrassing reminder of the fact that we've left the spiritual world. And you know, so it's there to remind us the embarrassing situation we put ourselves in life after life. So surrender means to be to depend fully on the spiritual master's protection and Krishna. Any other questions or comments?
As you said, dependent on Krishna is the most important thing. That's what Jayananda Prabhu did, and he made so many devotees. Even Jayapataka Swami, he got him.
What's that?
Jayapataka Swami was taken by Jayananda Prabhu, his enthusiasm.
Yes.
He made him to do the nails.
Okay.
Right.
That's right. His purity and his enthusiasm, which is synonymous, they're contagious. If there's purity, if a devotee remains on the spiritual platform, they naturally become enthusiastic. As soon as Prabhupada says, sometimes he would write a letter and he'd say, I detect that the devotees are not chanting the prescribed rounds and following the regular principles. How would he detect that? He would detect that sometimes because people would be writing letters to him and he could see the enthusiasm waning. And when he saw the enthusiasm waning, he understood, oh, you're not chanting, you're not following the principles. As soon as that happens, the enthusiasm wanes. But when someone, you know, follows those principles, they naturally become enthusiastic, you know, enthused by the spiritual energy. And that purity and enthusiasm, that has the potency to actually, affect the heart of the conditioned souls, to make them want to be devotees. If this Krishna consciousness movement, people will want to become, part of this Krishna consciousness movement, because of the purity of the movement, because of the fact that the devotees follow regulatory principles, because they don't take intoxication, because they don't have illicit sex, they don't gamble, they don't, you know, eat meat. Because of that, people will be attracted to our movement. And as soon as we give up that and compromise all our principles for some other, you know, then there will be no attraction. We will not be able to change our own hearts, let alone the hearts of anyone else. But yes, this is, you know, we see this in the life of Jayananda, that, you know, he was able to, people would be walking past on the streets and they would just, you know, come in contact with him just for a few moments, and next thing, they're giving all their time and whatever little money they had and everything just to, you know, build this rat cart and, you know, engage. You know, he would go to the markets and, you know, people were always, you know, offering him, you know, so many nice, you know, things for the temple, fruits and flowers and what have you, because he was so enthusiastic and pure. So, yeah, and you see, as you say, he attracted such a great personality like Jayapataka Maharaj. You know, intelligent people who are seeking something real spiritual life, they'll be attracted to this movement. But if we you know, make a farce of everything, then intelligent people, you know, they will not be attracted. And this movement is actually meant for attracting the most intelligent persons, such as Jayapataka Maharaj and Jayananda Prabhu and all the wonderful devotees. Any other questions or comments? Yep.
Just a comment on like if we just follow all paths and instructions, we'll be okay, but like sometimes we might read something but we might not understand it properly. Is that where we need the new spiritual master to guide us?
Now, Prabhupada says that if you chant 16 rounds and follow the four regular principles, the understanding, then you'll be able to understand Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And without that, we'll not be able to understand them.
So, not necessary to have a spiritual master?
Oh, it's necessary to have a spiritual master, but it's not necessary to have a spiritual master if we don't follow his instructions. That's the point. That's the point Prabhupada made. You know, Prabhupada had one disciple, and you know, he wasn't following. And you know, Prabhupada wrote to him and said, "So, what is the use of you calling yourself a disciple? Because you're not following. So, you're calling yourself a disciple, you're really just pretending to be my disciple." And Prabhupada in one letter said that those who don't chant, who don't follow my instructions to chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles and follow this routine program, they're not my disciples. In one letter he said, which is pretty heavy. At one time Prabhupada actually said that there were devotees, they were chanting Hare Krishna regularly. You know, and Prabhupada said, "You're already initiated because you're chanting. Because you're following, that's the beginning of initiation." And he gave the example of his own self that, you know, when he first met his spiritual master, he merely accepted Srila Bhaktisiddhanta within the heart. He accepted him, he accepted all his principles. And that was actually the beginning of initiation. Even though the formality was many years later, the real initiation actually began at that point. So initiation begins at the point we accept the spiritual master. And Prabhupada said in one letter that actually our eternal relationship with the spiritual master begins when we first hear from him. So we hear from him, that establishes the relationship, and when we accept what we're hearing, that's actually the beginning of initiation. When we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, that is, real initiation. Prabhupada says that sometimes one doesn't actually have to take formal diksha initiation in order to be a disciple. Sometimes, people accept the teachings but haven't taken initiation, and they're considered a disciple. Just like we're actually in one sense in the disciplic succession coming from Arjuna. Because Prabhupada says, Vyasadeva, he taught, you know, the principles which were accepted by Arjuna. He says, when one thing is equal to another, they're equal to each other. So, in that case, although we're not really in the disciplic succession because we haven't really taken formal initiation, but at the same time, because we accept Arjuna, who accepts Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're in his disciplic succession, although we haven't taken formal initiation. So, initiation is not the formality, but the acceptance of the Guru and the Guru's principles. That's the real initiation. And sometimes Prabhupada, you know, he would discuss about certain disciples who were not following, and he would say they think they're liberated, but they're not. Because they think, I've taken initiation from a Guru, but I'm not following. And he says they're thinking they're liberated, but they're not. Because, you know, they're not getting the protection of the spiritual master. Whereas sometimes people actually may not formally take initiation, just like, you know, many of us have not taken initiation from Srila Prabhupada, but at the same time, if we accept Srila Prabhupada's principles and follow them, then we're considered to be, you know, Srila Prabhupada's grand disciples in a Shiksha relationship like that. So, yes, we do need a spiritual master, but it's not just what we need is to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, not just to have a spiritual master that we've taken initiation from. They're actually not quite the same.
Besides this point, I mean, if you take a spiritual master and you don't follow, but is it possible to be connected to the Paramparama without needing a spiritual master? Can we just accept all the past instructions? Besides that point of whether someone's following or not, it's like if it's just on assuming that someone will follow, not that point.
Well, the thing is, if we accept Srila Prabhupada's instructions, we'll take initiation.
Yeah.
See, if we say, you know, maybe I won't take initiation, I'll just accept Srila Prabhupada's instructions. But Srila Prabhupada's saying take initiation. So, in one sense, you're not, therefore, to not take initiation means someone is not actually following Prabhupada's instructions. To follow Prabhupada's instructions means one actually takes, there's actually, a lot of different discussion on this particular matter, that chanting Hare Krishna is sufficient to take us back to Godhead, and one doesn't actually need to formally take initiation. Now, if you look at all the various different comments on that, if someone can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in the liberated stage, then that person may not need to take the spiritual master. They can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, accept Srila Prabhupada, you know, as like his shiksha, and go back to Godhead. But that means that that person who is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra like that, who, you know, on the liberated platform, they don't need a spiritual master in the sense that they have no attraction to the material energy. They have no sex desire. They have no, you know, subtle desires. They have no desires for anything in the material world. They're only, you know, 24 hours a day, they're just always immersed in Krishna and always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and preaching Krishna consciousness. If someone, you know, chants on that platform, and they may not take, for some reason, initiation before they die, for one reason or another, they can go back to Godhead. But generally, for most of us, in order to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra you know, properly, to rise from the Nama Aparad stage to the Nama, through the Nama Bas, to the pure chanting of the holy name, it is imperative that we take initiation from a spiritual master, otherwise we will never be able to you know, conquer the material energy. Because we're not liberated, we're conditioned souls, the material energy has us completely in her clutches. And it is, you know, that sort of chanting on that platform will not take us back to Godhead. And that's what I was saying. Prabhupada's saying, to go back to Godhead, he's saying, chant 16 rounds and follow the four regular principles. That sort of chanting takes you back to Godhead. Chanting Hare Krishna without following the four regular principles does not take you back to Godhead. That's, you know, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's instructions, you know, when you get down to the nitty gritty, it's that sort of chanting, that mature chanting, which guarantees success. You know, otherwise, you know, there was one disciple who was, you know, chanting Hare Krishna but actually engaging in all sorts of nonsense, and Srila Prabhupada said, you're just paving your way to hell. He was chanting Hare Krishna but engaged in all sorts of nonsense. Prabhupada said, you're paving your way to hell. And he was an initiated disciple. So, you know, to chant Hare Krishna nicely, to learn that art, where it's you know, it's coupled with the four regular principles and 24 hours Krishna consciousness, that we need to learn from the spiritual master. But if someone's on that platform where they're, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, completely aloof from the material energy, and for one reason or another they don't take initiation from the spiritual master, they can go back to Godhead. That's what that verse is.
Prabhupada has speaking about initiation. We understand that the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple is eternal. And this, is it eternal in the sense that when we come to the material world, it becomes eternal from that point of time? Or is it eternal even in the spiritual world when we were in the spiritual world? And how does that relationship manifest? Just because a disciple has fallen down into the material world, does the spiritual master come from the spiritual world and take us back? Or is it how that the relationship starts?
The Prabhupada said to Jadarani that, you know, as soon as you hear from your spiritual master, that eternal relationship with your spiritual master begins. So, you know, he's referring to this lifetime. So, in that sense, if there was if that relationship was already established in a previous lifetime, then it is beginning again. That eternal relationship is being revived again. the relationships that we have with each other in the spiritual world are eternal, and personalities who are dealing with us to get us back to the spiritual world, you know, those relationships in the spiritual world, they will continue. So, you know, they're eternal. But trying to understand, you know, that conception of eternal, especially when things sometimes stop and start, is very difficult to fathom. Some of those things are literally beyond our comprehension. Sometimes devotees have asked Srila Prabhupada certain questions which, you know, really very difficult. You know, we can get some sort of intellectual grasp around it, but you're talking about eternal matters and you know, which is something we have nothing to compare with in this material world. And he would say, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, serve Krishna 24 hours, go back to the spiritual world and find out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some things which are always going to be very difficult, you know, to understand. You know, not all of us are extremely philosophically inclined, and, you know, even sometimes the answer is given to us, we still don't understand it. But, rather than ponder some of the technicalities, we should take up the main instruction of the spiritual master. Our main focus, should be, what is the main backbone? Prabhupada said these activities, they're the backbone of our movement. So generally our focus should be like that. What is the most prominent, powerful, meditation on the instructions of my spiritual master? We should be meditating on that. Other technicalities are interesting. Yes, we should try and understand, especially good for, for preaching purposes or to remove doubts. But, the main thing is we should comprehend these things first. And then, and other things, if we don't get the answer, then let's just go back to Godhead and we'll get the answer there. But generally, it is stated that the relationship of the spiritual master and disciple is eternal. So that much we should at least understand. Yeah. One quick one here.
When we are surrendering to Krishna, as Krishna is asking us in the Bhagavad Gita, so are we because some people complain that you are taking life easy and you are running away from the responsibilities, so that's why you are trying to escape from the worries of the world. So how can we justify that this is a right step or
we don't care what other people say. We just care what Prabhupada says. That's it. So, all questions, Prabhupada.